Hey, legends, you know, none of our interviews or episodes ever date, ever. They are all timeless and ready for you for when you're ready to listen. Download the lot and rip in. Fishermen and women, are you ready? It's on again. It's the best thing going too. The Pertec Fishing Challenge is back April 20 and 21. It is the country's largest fishing challenge for those with the competitive edge. But there's a kicker. All proceeds are donated to Pertec's key charity partners, Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia and the Peter Duncan Neuroscience Research Unit at St Vincent's Hospital. It's just $30 to register, and each registration receives a limited edition cap, a brag mat and a sticker. There's a prize pool of over $300,000, including three boats and a jet ski to be won. And you can win the major prizes just by registering. You don't even need to fish. Grab your mates, register today. Head to pertecfishingchallenge.com.au for more information. And even if you're not going to cast a line, you can make a difference, just like Pertec does. The great ones, they're different. They really are. Not better, just different. Sure, there's a physical power, a mental strength, a complex but resolute constitution too. There's a whole lot more than just the measurables. That's something else, that intangible. It separates us from them. Welcome to the Legend Series on Andy Raymond Unfiltered. A different era, both in terms of football and society in general. This guy, this family, they're old school, they belonged. Challenges, controversies, celebrations, he left his imprint on our game. But who is Mark Bugden?
Who is he?
Yeah.
That's a good question. In football terms, I'm just a knockabout young fella from Earlwood,
yeah.
Marrickville. Grew up going to public schools, went to Canterbury Boys High School, which my first ever coach playing. We used to play half league, half union.
Okay.
I suppose looked up to me older brother,
yep.
who played first grade, and I said I want to play like him or with him or yeah. against him or whatever, and then we played a little bit together at union, but Jeff got hurt. A fair bit, and injuries held him back.
Yep.
And then he went to Parramatta.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started playing against him when I went to Canterbury. And then people even talk about it today. I was very lucky, and he even talks about it as well, that we played against one another in the 1986 grand final. Now too many brothers play against one another.
That is just,
you know,
yeah,
and
terrific.
they asked me, mum and dad, who were alive then, and said, "Who are you going for?" Mum just said, "I just don't want him to get hurt."
was that the answer?
Yeah, yeah. That was mum's answer.
Terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have minded watching a bit of backyard footy after school, the Bugden house in the late 60s. Jeff was 15, 16 months older. It would have been a reasonably full on contest, I would have imagined.
Yeah, it was. And we'd always end up in a punch up. And back then, I don't know what it was. I mean, it's because I was a younger brother, whatever. You would always be fighting. It didn't matter. To the case where mum would get the hose and put the hose on us, like two dogs out in the backyard having a brawl. But he'd always get the better of me because he was bigger and stronger than me and whatever. But I'll tell you what, he always said I always got him a fair few times, and I wasn't going to let him get away with it.
The thing with older brothers, I've been told, is they'll belch you, and happily, but if someone else tries to belch it, they'll be the one standing in
That's
front
correct.
Of you saying, not a chance.
Yep.
Good bodyguard, Big Jeffrey. Where did the footy journey begin, mate? It was in the family too, because I think I'm right in saying your uncle played for Australia.
Yeah, that's correct. You got Bobby Bugden, and I think he played halfback, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bobby Bugden, and here's my uncle, Dad's brother. So, it goes back, but there are days that people wouldn't even remember, I suppose, unless, you know, your age. But Yeah, I don't know. And it just came up where you'd be every Sunday or Saturday you'd be down the park,
yeah,
kicking a football around. You know, we did things like, instead of being on computers like that, I don't understand it, you know.
Yeah.
You're kicking a football around and you're drinking out of a tap.
Yes.
You're stinking hot and you needed a drink. You just go and put your hands together, you know, and have a drink. And then it was, come on, get back to it, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, you're letting the side down, come on. And whoever's there, whoever came along, would just, you know, you'd have a game of footy.
It was like that, and I can't speak for the 60s. I can speak for the late 70s, early 80s, but... You know, there was no iPads, there was no phones, there wasn't games. So groups of kids over summer would meet at the cricket field and over winter they'd meet at the footy field after school, and somehow a game would get started. Somehow there'd be a couple of fights, and when the streetlights came on,
get your backside home, otherwise you're in trouble.
Yeah,
exactly.
But that was every day.
Yeah, that's right. Straight after school as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Straight down the park, you know, wherever you could, and kick around. And that's how you met your mates too, you know.
You're exactly right. Jeff made his first grade debut mid-79 for Newtown. In that footy side, guys like Phil Sigsworth, Kenny Wilson, Steve Bowden. Your debut had come 2 years later. I reckon it was the last round of 1981, maybe. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's when Warren Ryan rested a lot of the first graders because we'd made the semis. And that's when I played against St George, against our friend John Dowling. Yeah,
it was Sunday, August 20. The Jets on the road to the Dragons at Cogra. What do you remember of the day, mate?
I just remember Andy, it was just a fantastic day. You know, you wake up and you go, geez, I'm playing first grade today with the Newtown jersey on.
Yeah,
and away we go, and you're playing with blokes, and Tommy wouldn't let you get away with nothing. He was running the show.
He was the captain.
Yeah,
that's right.
He was running the show, and Graham O'Grady was the other fellow I was thinking about. Graham O'Grady in there.
Yep.
I think and Ronnie Sigsworth, that's Phil's brother. He played fullback. You've got Grant Ellis. Craig Ellis's brother, he was on there. Yeah, but Warren Ryan just left a couple of blokes on there. And I'm not saying he think we'd lose, but he thought go out there and enjoy the game and all the best. And we got them. We beat them. It was unbelievable.
Hooker in 1981. very, very different to the position now, almost two different positions. You needed to be double tough back in the day. And for old front rowers and old hookers, a young hooker on debut.
Oh, yeah.
Well, mate, you had a target on your forehead.
You did. Exactly on your forehead. And can I say, and this is no BS, Andy, mate, when you went into the scrum, whether it was your loose or not, it was a headbutt.
Yeah.
And it was a crack. And I don't know if you've heard skulls crack, but I'm telling you, at the end of the game, you'd come off and I'd be putting ice on me forehead. You know what I mean, and I'd see stars.
Yeah,
like they say like a bit punch drunk or whatever. You know what I mean. But every scrum you went into was a headbutt, because if you didn't push for your spot, the other hooker would take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the loose. So you had to sort of not dominate, but make sure that you were letting him know you've got that loose.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And if you didn't have the loose, you're not. That's the one closest to the ball for the young blokes that don't know. If you haven't got the loose, you've got no chance of winning that ball, even if your halfback's putting the ball in, you know what I mean?
Well, modern-day fans, they see a scrum pack and it's the jigsaw puzzle's got six parts, three in one jersey, three in the other, and they rest on each other.
Yep.
Back in the day, it was three missiles charging at each other, forehead first.
Yeah, head first, and then the push was unbelievable, you know, and then... Obviously, that was the idea of the lock in the second row, is not to screw the scrum, so you keep it around so where the ball was going in. And the halfback had to get the ball in quick.
Yeah.
So before it got screwed around, because nine times out of ten it got screwed around because of the weight, you know what I mean, it was pushing.
Well, something had to give.
Yeah.
Mate, which old-timers tested you? Front rower or hooker or a second rower that might have been able to slide a right hand through? Because... as hooker was then, a young number 12 was the target.
Exactly, and I learnt very quick, and as I said, you went in with a loose arm every scrum. Right?
Just in case?
Oh, 100%, because when you go in with no loose arm, you'd get belted in the face, and then there'd be hands going everywhere as well to try and cover your face, not to gouge or anything like that, but to cover your eyes, and, you know, there was a bit of funny stuff going on there as well. But so... you had to go in with a loose arm and grab the other hook, and you'd be pulling him away and stuff like that. And you had to be careful not to get your arm down, because as soon as the referee, because he'd be looking in there, as soon as he saw an arm hanging down, he'd penalise straight away, loose arm.
Yeah.
You wouldn't hear about that loose arm today, would
you? No. Well, they barely put any arms around. Right. They'd stand there and fall. A double on debut, a try in each half against the Dragons, but you couldn't keep your spot. Barry Jensen returned for the club. The club went through to the grand final. That's a tough learning curve, but Barry Jensen at the top of his game at the time.
100%, yeah. And I knew that anyway.
Yeah.
It was always going to be. They were resting because they made the finals. But there again, Warren Ryan sat me on the bench. And I was never a chance. Jimmy Walters was the other backup hooker.
There you
Jimmy
go.
Walters.
Yeah.
Here we go. Redhead fella. Another great hooker who played second row and got trained into hooker. But Warren Ryan sat us on the bench. We knew we were never going to get a start. But I tell you, who can sit on the bench as a young bloke at the Sydney Cricket Ground in a grand final? You know?
It's a dream come true.
Unbelievable, it was.
Two characters we're going to talk about from that club and that era. First up, Warren Ryan. He changed the game. He changed how it was played. Grumpy, aggressive, short with people, and many reckon they're his good points. But an amazing footy mind, the Wok. What was your relationship with the Wok like?
So in the early piece, as a young fella growing up, I never wanted to make a mistake because you'd make the odd mistake when you're learning moves. And he used to say to you, do that again and you can go back and play reserve grade.
Wow.
And you go, yeah, exactly. I went, holy shit, I'm not going to mess this move up. And you're thinking about it, you're sleeping about it, you're making sure because, mate, no hesitation in sending you back to reserve grade. No problem at all. And once you got it looking and a start, you did not want to go back to reserve grade, no. You know what I mean? And it was just fantastic. He had the best football brain I've ever – as a bloke, it was a funny sort of bloke, but he's a school teacher. I'm not going to hold that against him.
Fishermen and women, are you ready? It's on again. It's the best thing going too. The Pertec Fishing Challenge is back April 20 and 21. It is the country's largest fishing challenge for those with the competitive edge. But there's a kicker. All proceeds are donated to Pertec's key charity partners, Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia and the Peter Duncan Neuroscience Research Unit at St Vincent's Hospital. It's just $30 to register, and each registration receives a limited edition cap, a brag mat and a sticker. There's a prize pool of over $300,000, including three boats and a jet ski to be won. And you can win the major prizes just by registering. You don't even need to fish. Grab your mates, register today. Head to pertecfishingchallenge.com.au for more information. And even if you're not going to cast a line, you can make a difference, just like Pertec does.
But I don't know if people know, he used to go and watch the game behind the goalposts.
Yeah.
He sat behind the goalposts on his own, or whoever wanted to go there, sit there and talk to him, whatever, and he'd sit there and watch the whole game from behind the post, especially if it was a team we were going to play against coming up in a couple of weeks, and he'd sit there and he'd know exactly which way this bloke's going or whatever.
Yeah.
And that to me was just outstanding, you know what I mean? And as I said, back to the training, he didn't do the training. We had trainers, but he was telling them what to do. He'd have you down there an hour before, like a scheduled training at 6 o'clock.
Yep.
You had to be down there at 5, and if you weren't, well, you weren't going to be part of the team. So you had to be down there at 5, and you're doing. He loved bench pressing. He wanted all the front rowers and the forwards bench pressing, and he'd write it up. That'd be a chart on the wall. So you had to do your half, three quarters an hour bench pressing.
Yeah.
Then out come the big heavy bags, tackling bags, right, mate. It was hard enough picking it up off the ground, let alone smashing it, you know. And then you'd hear blokes like Gillespie and Kell that belting these bags, mate. And I'm telling you, Andy, it was, you know, hours upon hours. Then we'd all go in and then have to punch the bag, you know. Like and I'll take my hat off to a boxer, mate, like doing rounds on the bag. That is unbelievable fitness. Yeah. But I remember, I was probably going off the track a little bit, but I remember I could eat anything. I could eat cakes. I could eat the fattiest food ever
because
it didn't worry.
It off.
It just it You'd lose it.
Wow.
Yeah. You could eat anything. Chocolates and ice cream and anything you wanted.
Knowing that you'd be going to training the next day and sweating it out.
Lose it.
So Wok was the coach. Tommy Radonikis was your first captain. What was Tommy like back in the day?
There's a lot of stories about Tommy. God love Tommy. He changed the attitude at Newtown. He brought a lot of that mongrel into the side where, you know, never say die, and he wasn't happy if you missed a tackle or you dropped a ball or whatever. He would go off his head, you know what I mean? Like, and a very good captain in relation to reading a game, you know what I mean? Which way we're going to go and what's happening now. And I always remember when I went to Canterbury that Steve Moore used to say, I used to hate playing against Tommy because he knew Tommy would go around the blind side and clock him one in every game. And he did it religiously. Yeah. You know,
what's your favourite Tommy story? What's your go-to? Something that puts a smile on your face as we remember the great man.
Tommy, I went to a fancy dress at Newtown Lewis Club, and he turned up. He was the only one not in a fancy dress. So he said, "I'm not having a party," because he didn't think anyone would turn up. You know, some blokes don't turn up in a fancy dress. So he went up to a table and he took two tablecloths off the table, just ripped them straight off the table, went into the toilets, come out with a nappy on, like with one in a nappy and the other one like a cape. So it was super baby.
terrific, Tom. That is brilliant. Mate, 34 games for Newtown over three seasons, including the honour of being the starting hooker for the club's final game ever. It was Arana Park, a 9-6 win over Canberra. Sad day. Tough day or just another day, the last game for the Jets?
No, it's a good call. It was just another day, however, it was a sad day. We knew that was the last day, Newtown. But everyone was of the belief, and I don't know if you remember, everyone was of the belief that Newtown was being sold to Campbelltown. We're going there as Newtown, Campbelltown the following year. It was all done behind the scenes with the power brokers and whatever. We're going to be Newtown, Campbelltown, going to Campbelltown. So we thought, okay, just another game, let's go. We need to win this game. The hype was there to win the game so that they can say, well, at least they're a start. And, you know, we'll continue this next year when we go out to Campbelltown.
Mm.
And never eventuated. Yeah, obviously fell over before it even began, mate, or it just was not going to happen. But very sad. A lot of blokes that missed out on a lot of other teams. Gary Webster, the late Gary Webster now. Mate, fantastic footballer. He got a start. Other blokes, Lance Thompson, a lot of blokes got a start from other clubs, hoping that that Newtown would be alive and continue on, you know.
Was probably the first sign in rugby league that things were slowly changing, and just as important as wins and losses were balance sheets for the accountants, and Newtown was probably 20 years before Super League, but the start of the evolution in the game, things were changing.
That's right. And but as players, you sort of don't worry about that.
No,
But I know what you mean. That's what happened to it. And so just on that, we never got paid for 1986, whatever your contract money and your playing money, because it was a win, lose or draw and you got a better payment. Yeah. We never got paid in 1983, but they paid us in 1986 when they sold the Lewis Club and the car park and everything. So wow. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't know.
So you didn't get paid at the time for 1983.
Never got paid at the time.
3 years later. 1983
got paid 3 years later. So they honoured their agreements with contracts and all that type of thing. So
that was a huge gain.
Yeah, that's a gain. Frank Farrington, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't like him, but I did. I thought he was a good man and a fair man, you know, hard man. Ex-boxer too and whatever. But
correct.
And played the game. But he was a fair man, so yeah, a lot of people don't know that, but we got our dues.
I moved to Canterbury in 1984. The Dogs of War had been born, and I don't know, and I say this respectfully, but I don't know if there was a guy more suited to that side and that culture than you. Were the Dogs an easy and a good fit for Mark Bugden?
Yeah, looking back at it now, you're right, it was. But I had to earn it. I didn't get handed me on a platter. And I signed for 1 year, right, for nothing, virtually nothing.
Wow.
Can't remember what it was, 1 year. Peter Moore said, well, we'll give you a start here. Warren Ryan wants you at the club. I said, okay. So, and I remember going, just training your backside off again, playing hard footy in reserve. Great. Now, it was only funny. I was a mate up here, Gary Moon, and a couple of other blokes up here. We looked at a side. And you look at the reserve grade side.
Oh,
mate,
yeah.
It's like another first grade side.
Yep, too
true. It was unbelievable, you know. And so you know what I'm talking about there. And it was just fantastic. And how we never made the grand final in the reserve grade is unbelievable. But
yep.
As you know, Warren wasn't concentrating on reserve grade, and he just pulled blokes up left, right, and centre. When you get a coercion mixed up in the footy game, it sort of runs off. But back to the story, and then I don't know. You've got the stats there when I got called up to play first grade.
Yeah,
and so continuing on from that, and then when I got called up to play first grade, and here I'm playing in this side with these great footballers. It was just absolutely fantastic. And you know, then we made the semi finals, and Peter Moore would come up to me and say, "Mark, got to see you about a contract." I said, "No, Peter, no." After the grand final, he kept saying, well, it mightn't be there. And, you know, I look back at it now, Andy, and blokes should know this who play the game. I could have got hurt the next game, next week. See you later, Mark. Never to be seen again.
No contract. Yeah.
And I just kept going, nah. I'll wait till the grand final, wait till after the grand
final. Back yourself.
I backed myself, yeah, 100%, 100%.
And obviously when we're talking about first grade, reserve grade, and we're talking about you and Billy Johnston, both at the club, both genuine starting hookers in any football side, both very different from one another. What a rivalry that was, just for a position in the side.
Yeah, it was.
Amazing.
It was, and it was funny because I remember my very last first grade game, and Billy and I talk about it. We're good friends to today, but when I first went there, we weren't. You
Is
know?
That right?
Yeah. It was funny. It just how blokes are, knocking heads, you know what I mean? And I remember the very last game at Henson Park against Canterbury. He's the hooker and I'm the hooker for Newtown. And we're niggling one another all day, as you do with hookers. Yeah. Well, it was on. And I'll tell you, him being an ex-boxer, he hit me four times. I never even seen one of them, you know. And what could I do? The only thing I could do was headbutt him. So I headbutted him. We both got sent off. The referee
did you really?
Yeah, like Sinbin. Yeah. You know? The referee said, righto. Off he's go. And then, you know, and just as we're going off, we're calling one another names and whatever, and Billy's going behind the grandstand after the game. I said, now. And you want to have a shot at me? Have a shot at me again now? Come on. Because you're hyped up, you know. And then the officials come out and took us away and whatever. Anyway, but lo and behold, you know, the following year I signed at Canterbury and, we didn't talk for a while early on.
I bet.
Just obviously just blokes being blokes, and you know, you're fighting for position.
Yeah.
It's not like you're fighting, you know, like front row, second row, or it's lock, you can play lock, second row. There's one position, that's it, yeah. So
and as blokes, we're stubborn and we've got egos.
Oh, yeah.
And
everything, all the above. And, we sort of just, like passing in the night, we'd see one another at the club, whatever, as you did on Sunday night. Yeah. You'd have a couple of beers and whatever, and we never spoke and whatever, until later in the year. It was later in the year we went on an end of season trip, and I don't know. One of us just said, "How about we just put this to bed and just have you know?" And we just shook hands and got on the drink and had a good time. You know what I mean? And
love it.
On top of that, I ended up going to his family's home at me, him and folks, and I think Gillespie might have gone as well. Went up to his family place near Cunnamulla, out that way. Went out to his property, did a bit of shooting, whatever. So, yeah, we sort of just buried the hatchet, and that was the following year.
Terrific. We'll go back to 84. What a year for you. 10 games, including the most important one, the last one of the year, the grand final, and that try.
Ronan kicks off to start the grand final in 1984. Andrew Farrer takes it back. Tunks to the 22. Inside for Terry Lamb. Wide ball for Peter Mortimer. He's over. No, he's called it back. He's ruled a forward pass.
Mortimer taken by Muggledon, and Price is still down, clutching his right wrist.
If Canterbury can spread the ball wide to the right-hand side, they'll find that their only opposition there is...
Bugden will score! Bugden has gone from dummy half easily to score.
That's the area where Price should have been, of course.
It was one of only two tries in the game. Chris Mortimer kicked the goal. You win 6-4 and a piece of history next to your name. That's pretty cool.
It is cool. And I'm very proud of it too.
I bet you.
Yeah. And everyone always talks about it, you know, which is fantastic. But the thing that gives me the willies about it is they say, oh, if Ray Price had burned up, because he was down injured.
He was down.
He would have got you. And I went, yeah, would he? Well, that's just history. He was down. Yeah. Game goes on. You know?
He wasn't up, so he wasn't there. What a game of football that was.
Oh, it was fantastic. It's 40 years ago, as we said, and yeah, it doesn't feel like yesterday, but I tell you, it was, you know, just the fans going screaming and yelling and everyone going for Canterbury, you know what I mean? There's a lot of Parramatta fans there too, but I think we had outdone them in the fans situation, you know. And the game, you know, was just it was hard, solid. Had everything in there, you know what I mean? Yeah, it didn't have a lot of tries like people wanted, you know. It's funny that we talked about that earlier, but it had everything else that you could throw at it in there, you know.
3 years grand final scores were 6-4, 7-6 and 4-2, and I challenge anyone to find me three better games. Maybe I'm an old grumpy bastard, but I reckon 84, 85, 86 grand finals are as good a sport as you will see. The last second in that 86 grand final, seven Parramatta players were trying to stop a Bulldog from scoring a try to win the premiership after 80 minutes. Does it get better?
You hit the nail. Yeah. Dead said, Andy, and I'm glad you said that, but I've got to go further on that, and a lot of people won't remember this either because someone said to me, "Oh, if you'd have passed the ball out, we would have had him out." What? It's an old saying, yeah, but if, mutt, maybe, whatever. Yeah. But the other thing people don't remember, Andy, and this might come as a shock to all of us, is the other thing people don't remember. Here we are, you're out there playing on the field. Today, what do you think the blokes are doing today? They're looking to go, we've got 2 minutes to go, or 2 minutes, 30 seconds to go. They stopped the clock at five minutes to go.
They did.
I don't know, it was second, third tackle, don't quote me on it, but we still had plenty of tackles left.
Yeah.
So I got a chance. I'm going to shoot off and dummy half again. I thought I was a chance, but like you said, there was about eight of them there, near the whole side. And, you know, but that's when they all come in after I've ran, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't there, but blokes are saying, well, if you ever pass the ball out, mate, and next thing you know, they blow the siren because we don't know how long there is to go. They stop the clock. You know why they stop the clock, don't you? To stop the young blokes running on the field.
The kids running. And an explanation for anyone under 40 years of age and before technology came in, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, what are these two old bastards talking about? At every New South Wales rugby league game, and I think it was the same up in Brisbane, the clock at the ground for the second half only to stop kids running onto the field was stopped at 5 minutes. So no one actually knew how many minutes and seconds to go. You would do your best to guess, but the players on the field, they're battling fatigue, they're battling each other. They had no idea. Mate, I mentioned the term dogs of war earlier. Rugby league hadn't seen this type of aggression, this type of whack. When you hear the term dogs of war, what do you think of? Or who do you think of? The best footy talk and live talk there is. I hope you enjoyed this edition of the Legend Series. The Rugby League Superpod comes out later in the week and the Dream Team Series on the weekend. Four podcasts every week in season on the only podcast that talks with the biggest names, not about them. Make sure you come back soon. Legends.